Welcome to the Title Chaser Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ron Elkins, and today we have a very special episode for you guys called Chaseology, featuring our founder and CEO, Antonio Simmons. This first episode will lay the foundation of what our podcast will be about, which is music, fashion, and goal setting. Please remember to register at www.titlechaser.com and create a profile on our social media platform. This episode does have some explicit language, so please be mindful of that if you have any children around. Enjoy the episode. Tell me about, you know, growing up in Youngstown. You started hustling.
Yeah.
You was working too at the same time. What was that like? How did you try to hide that from your mom?
Right. Well, just growing up in Youngstown, it was, you know, it was hard. It was at first growing up when we were younger, it was cool. Like a lot, it was small. It wasn't big. Everybody knew each other. It was a lot of love. But later on, a lot of killing started going on, like the dope gang. I think when it really started getting bad, it started a downward trend with the steel mills closing. And then when that crack hit took Youngstown. That crack took Youngstown to a whole nother level of violence and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we both knew, you know, people in terms of who it affected in terms of the families. And just, you know, for me, being a younger dude, seeing everything, you know, the cats riding up and down Hillman with the trucks and with the gold chain, it was an allure to that.
Yeah.
You know, being in the hood.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's what kind of brought me in, so to speak, because I always worked. You know, I was working. I started working at Ponderosa, the little steakhouse. Then after Ponderosa, after I graduated from high school, my uncle ended up getting me a job at a nursing home. But it was still that street allure where you had the dudes riding with the Nissans, with the kids, and you had them back in the day. They was driving, remember the 9.8s and all of them.
Yeah, rimmed up.
With the deep dish rims
down. Yeah, coming down bow legged.
Right. that was really what drew me in to being in the streets even more, because when I was working, they started cutting my hours. I was hustling a little bit then, but I was mainly more working than hustling. But when they started cutting my hours, it led me to more time to be in the streets. So it was a transition. Now I'm starting to hustle more than I'm starting to work. You know what I mean? And then just the more I started to hustle, the more money I actually started to make. And then I just eventually said, man, you know what? I ain't even going to get another job. This is just what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, because like you said, like, remember that summer, that 95? That summer of 95 and 96 was crazy when we had the record, all the record-breaking homicides in the city then. Did you feel like, man, I can't do this forever?
Oh, yeah, yeah, most definitely. Even when I was working and I was hustling a little bit, I never planned on hustling for a long time. It was just to get a couple extra dollars, put some money in my pocket or whatever the case may be. But, yeah, with all the killings and people going to jail and stuff like that, I never wanted to be a full-time hustler. I never had the mentality that I'm a ball till I fall. I always just wanted to make the money. It was a means to an end. Like, I wanted to make the money to do something else eventually. Once I started hustling more and started accumulating more money, I'm like, yo, okay, I can't keep doing this, but I have to do something else.
Right. Now, what were some of the first businesses that you started while you were hustling, you know, taking that money, the means, and justifying the ends with it? What were you doing? What were some of the businesses you started?
The first thing I ever done was I started a record label, Chopping Gang Records. So okay. it was.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right. So when I started Chopping Gang, you know, I had family that was talented into music. You know, like I say, if they don't know, they know now. Like, we're first cousins, so music always been in our family. So first of all, that was the first thing that I thought about getting into. And then back then, you know, you had your Master P's, you had your Babies from Cash Money.
Right. So you seen these cats. Yeah, you seen the cats from the street make the transition to the music game.
So right.
Like, all right, you know, yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying.
Hell yeah. That that was the thing. Like, yo, okay, if these dudes are street dudes and they transition into the music game, like at the end of the day, we got talent. We got enough talent to do it. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. So that's when we started the music thing heavy.
So now I remember at one point you had to, you know, seen a chopping game. Party, not the party bus, the van, the bus y'all had, the tour bus.
Right, the tour bus, yeah.
So was y'all, where was y'all going? Where was y'all taking Chopping Game to?
Well, back then, we were just going on tour doing promotions, you know, Pittsburgh, Akron, you know, because at that time I stayed in, when I got the bus, I stayed in Columbus. So we were just traveling to a lot of little cities within the Midwest. You know, then we would travel down to Atlanta. We traveled down all the way down to Miami one time. Okay. So that we was using it to get out on the promo scale.
Okay. Now with the music and you being in Columbus, did you feel like you had to go into a bigger market at the time to try to expand?
Right, exactly. That's why I moved. Well, that's part of the reason I moved from Youngstown to Columbus. With Youngstown, me being in the streets, I had been in it long enough to know, like, I'm either going to die or I'm going to go to jail. So if I really want to make this music dream happen, I have to get somewhere where I can be a little bigger of a city and I can kind of be more comfortable trying to accomplish what I was trying to accomplish. You know, right. So that was part of the reason I did move to Columbus and started and kept doing the music down there. I also opened a record store down there.
Oh, okay. What was the name of the record store?
It was called VIP Music.
Oh, like so, Snoop? Like the one Snoop was dancing on top of?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, got down there, opened up VIP, me and one of my best friends who end up tragically dying in Youngstown, Chris Hodge, me and him opened up VIP Music. It was my mentality doing business was to say, okay, I'm gonna open up this record store. It's gonna give us a flagship store to also sell our music out of.
Right, okay. You know? So I mean with the record store and making that transition, which is dope. I mean, obviously, you know, you kind of handcuffing yourself to where you got one thing working and it's going to coincide with the next. Did you ever think about like a nightclub or something like that?
Well, you know what? Actually, no. I just was mainly focused on music. Then I met another good friend of mine down there. His name is Sean Pass. Me and him wanted to do something. He also became a partner in with me in Chopping Game. But, you know, my mom was always a hell of a cook. Right. So I remember one time we was out looking at restaurants and stuff to try to open up a soul food spot. And we go in the strip bar after we out just looking at all these places to try to open up the restaurant. And the strip club was dead as a damn doorknob. So it's me, Sean, and my homegirl Kia. So we get to talking to the guy who went there, and let me make a long story shorter, we end up finding out it was for sale. So that's how we got into the club aspect of it. So
is this where the original location of the Obvious was at, or?
Yeah, that was the Obvious, yes, sir.
Okay.
But the thought process, even once we thought about it, we said, okay, we'll do a club, but the club is also to help us give us another platform for music. We thought, like, okay, we open the club. Now we can bring artists in to do shows, and we can network with the artists that we bring in to do shows. So everything I was doing was almost catered around the opportunity to take our music to the next level.
So while you were still doing this and setting this up, were you still like hustle, were you part-time doing the business, or were you still hustling full-time?
Part-time doing business, part-time hustling. Okay. In and out, like, in and out. It was kind of hard to to leave the hustling alone all the way, because you know when you sometimes when you first start a business, it's kind of rough at first.
Right.
So yeah, so it was like in and out.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know, like you said, a lot of times, you know, if you ain't breaking even or turning a profit there, it's like, man, where am I get this money from, you know, to be right. able to do it? So you always kind of revert back to what you know and kind of what you've been accustomed to doing.
Yep, you're right. And that's like the biggest thing that can hinder you, you know, because once you turn back to what you're used to doing, you never really giving yourself a chance at what you're trying to accomplish in your business.
Right.
You know what I mean? So and you end up having a mentality like, okay, if this don't work, I can go back to this. As right. opposed to saying, if this don't work, ain't nothing else gonna work. So I'm gonna make sure
right.
this shit work.
Right, exactly. No, yeah, because even when like when I moved down to Columbus and you know, going into the club and you know, we was doing our music thing at the same time. And just trying to build right. that buzz up, you know. But like you said, you always got to try to find ways of, you know, one hand feeding the other, but yeah. never giving nothing your all 100%. Like you said, if it's a way to where you say, man, fuck it, I'm all in 100%. You ain't going to fail that way because you ain't right. failed at nothing you done in your life.
You're right. And that's the mentality you got to have. So, and if you take on that mentality, you assume that responsibility. Once you assume that responsibility, you all in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You all in. Because yeah. one thing's for sure, two things for certain, you going to revert back to what you knew will always take you to the place you don't want to go.
Yeah, man.
You know?
That's real. So now during this time, all right, so you got Chopping Game, the record label, you got right. the nightclub, you got the Obvious. Tell right. me about the times in that. Did you ever feel like the clock was gonna run out on you?
Oh yeah. I always felt it was ticking. Like even though I would try to accomplish something else and keep it moving, like I always felt like, okay, this clock is ticking. Even as with doing with the music, you're realistically on a time clock because let's be real, the music is a young man's game.
Right.
You know? So you always like, okay, we need to hurry up. We got to blow up. Like, we in our young, early 20s, but me being a realistic person, I'm like, time goes by fast.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I always felt we were on the clock just based on that. And then also, us still dealing with aspects of the streets. Like, that realization was still there. Like, that reality was still there.
Yeah.
You can still go to jail. You can still get killed.
Yep.
Because you're not all the way out.
Right, right. Yeah, man, because it was funny because I had, you know, me and you was always like the older cousin. So it's like, you know, I see you, but we didn't really start getting a relationship until, you know, I came down there and you would let me throw events and stuff in the club. But I'll always talk to Marky, your brother, right. and be like, yo, this cat like remodeling this shit, and it's like, where are you getting the money from? It's like, you know, how is he doing this, you know, still?
Right.
You know, so he's like, no, Marky be like, nah, he ain't doing, you know, this is what he doing, this is what he got. But it's like you said, it's like we ain't stupid, we from the same area. But at the same time, I knew you was trying to improve upon things. I knew to get out.
Right. It's, you know what, it's crazy though. That's why I like the show Power so much, because it's so realistic, because you do have dudes like myself that was really, really starting shit trying to get the fuck out the streets for real. Not yes. just trying to do something to cover up what I'm doing in the streets, how tiny
right.
was.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a big difference. So, yeah, that's everything I've done, I've always done wholeheartedly to do it, to be successful, and to leave that part of the life and lifestyle completely alone.
How was it? I mean, how was it like when, like, Aunt Rome and your granddad and grandma found out that you was hustling?
that was kind of rough. Only thing that they told me, or they, you know, at a certain point, like I said, I didn't really start getting into the streets heavy till after I graduated from high school. I dibbled and dabbled a little bit in high school, but I really started getting in after that. So, but at that point in time, I was grown. You know, my parents, my grandparents, they like, yo, you know, we don't approve of this, and we understand you grown and you're going to make your own decisions. But at the end of the day, don't let this become your life.
Right.
You know,
I don't even know if it was like awkward going to like family dinners.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit, you know, like kind of like, yo, like everybody, you know, like you don't work, bro, but you got four cars, you got a motorcycle,
right.
you got all this shit.
Yeah, you shined like, up. You shined up.
Yeah, jewelry, right? Jewelry and all this shit. Like, bro, you like goddamn 20 years old with a goddamn Rolex on. Like, it's almost an awkward feeling. But you know what? At the same time, I was never a person who was selfish. You know what I'm saying? So, because I always, like I say, I always had a mentality. The shit that I try to do for my family to improve our situation. Generation wise, so I've always done stuff for my family and done it out the kindness of my heart, like not just to be doing something just to say, oh, I've done this for you. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So it was a little, at times it would be a little awkward, but they understood. I would talk to them. They understood that what I was doing was a means to accomplish something else, and I'd never planned on just doing that just to do it.
All right, so I'm about to paint a picture for you real quick. So it's about, I'm working at Chase at the time. So right. I'm at Chase. It's about 2007. You won't be able to correct me if I'm wrong, about 2006, 2007. And I'm at Chase, so they come in, and everybody, so this is kind of, I wasn't even on Facebook at the time, but I think somebody had a newspaper, and this big indictment came in. You know, I'm seeing people I know that we work with at Chase. They ain't at work, but everybody came in. So you got Pop in there. And then I scroll down. As I look down on there, I see Antonio Simmons. So I'm like, I'm like, you know, what's going on with this? So what happened? What led up everything leading up to that point?
Well, once again, like I say, it's just when you're in the streets, you run that risk of either going to jail or getting caught up. So it was crazy because when that was happening, like the feds and stuff, they was hitting people's houses, but like people I knew, they wasn't, and there wasn't nobody going to jail though. But I had moved to Atlanta right while all of that was happening. So I'm like, they not messing with me. I'm going down there. I'm trying to do the music. My guy, you know what I mean? Shout out to Papa Joe. He plugged me in with Gucci Mane, plugged me in with Dipset. Like, I knew, and then I already knew some people in the music game anyway from just being in there for so long.
Right.
So I was in Atlanta at the time doing my thing with the music. We were starting to create a name and a buzz. And then next thing you know, like you say, the feds come in, pick up 29 of us.
So wait, they picked you up down there, or was you up here when they picked you up?
Well, I was actually in Ohio when they picked us up. When they picked me up, I was up here. I was in Ohio visiting, and they came. I was spending the night with my sister's house. I woke up that morning, went to go. I was actually on my way back to Atlanta. Me and one of the other guys who rapped for me, my dude Cognac. I was going to say bye to my mom.
Yeah.
Get ready to get on the road. I didn't even get a chance to get over to my mother's house. Like, left my sister, got up that morning, left my sisters, hit a couple corners.
Yeah.
And, you know, they flying in from everywhere.
Damn.
It's over.
So you knew right then and there what time it was?
Oh, yeah, I knew what time it was. I knew what time it was, and they like, when I seen the detectives, like the feds, and they like, yo, we got number whatever 26 or something, I'm just like, I ain't even say nothing the whole time. I'm just like, yeah, all right. this is what time it is already. Right. I always feared that, and that's what it was. I knew what it was. It was over.
It'd be so crazy. It seemed like it come at the most, like the time where you really ain't even all the way in like that.
I wasn't even in like that. And then how I got indicted was off of phone conversations that were actually bogus. We'll talk about that, but yeah, like that whole scenario was definitely life changing.
Yeah, because I just remember when everything came in, and I think I called Marky because I know he was still down in Atlanta at the time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think I called Marky to see what was going on. And he was like, man, it's like it's crazy. So he ain't really going too deep. Obviously, he probably didn't want to talk on the phone or nothing like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It was definitely a crazy time. Like, I've been in, had little run-ins with the law before, but something like that is on a whole totally different level, you know? So it was actually what I call at this point, I call it, my silver lining. Like it was something that needed to actually happen to me for me to understand more things about myself and figure other things out. Like it was just a trying time, it was real trying. So you gotta think, imagine waking up, bruh, right? Waking up, going about your day, getting picked up by the feds,
mm-hmm.
and never seeing the streets again for what they sent me to 5 years, but we'll go into that later too. But imagine just waking up, getting picked up by the feds, and never seeing the streets again for 4 years until you get back home. Like some people on my case, they were getting right out. You know what I mean? Right. They got a chance to dot their I's, cross their T's, handle their loose ends going on out there.
Right.
I couldn't do none of that. They ain't let me do none of that, bruh. They was like, no, like, if you ain't helping us, we don't have no love for you. Like,
so they ain't even let you bond, like even get a bond or nothing?
Bruh, no, I had two bond hearings. Got denied for both of them. They said I was a flight risk because I stayed in Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? But realistically, they didn't care if I stayed in Atlanta or not. The only thing they care about is the cooperation.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
If you ain't cooperating with them, we ain't cooperating with you, and you're going to sit your ass down.
Right.
That's all to it.
So tell me about your time in there. You know, what was your mind state like when you first, when you got in there? What was it? Was it immediately like, man, as soon as I get out of here, I'm about to start this, or was it like, man, like the initial shock?
it was the initial shock, but it was more, I felt that I disappointed my family and my friends, my artists, the producers, because we was right there on the cusp of starting to really... We had been in Atlanta for probably about 9 months, and honestly, no bullshit, we accomplished more in them 9 months than doing music the whole about 10 years in Ohio. You know what I'm saying? So now you asked me, like, was it profitable or did you break even, like, about the music? That's when things were really starting to turn the corner.
Right.
And that's why sometimes when people say, oh, like, you got to be in certain places to make certain shit happen. That's true. That's definitely true. It ain't where you from. It's where you at when it comes to some shit.
Right, right.
So being in Atlanta, you know what I mean? It was definitely where we needed to be doing music. You know what I mean? And like I say, my dude Papa Joe had plugged me in with Gucci down here. But at the time, Gucci was going through his some of his legal problems, he was actually doing time and doing a violation on a violation. So like everything was kind of just right there, basically waiting for us. But we started doing our own thing while he was locked up. And we, like I said, we had songs on the radio. Like, we going to clubs, we doing shows. Like, everything was starting to be everything that we wanted it to be. You know what I mean?
Everything that y'all done worked for, like you said, in that 10 years, is culminating now.
Man.
And now you sitting in the jail, you sitting in the feds.
Yeah, now I'm sitting in the feds. I just felt, like I said, initially the shock of me going to jail was it. What was real. But I just felt like I disappointed everybody, especially when we just got to this point to where we turning the corner and we got a real chance to do it, you know what I mean? All for all of our hard work to pay off. And I'm sitting in the goddamn jail.
Right. Where they have you at initially?
Initially, when they first picked us up, they held me in Cincinnati, and then once I took my plea and everything, they took me from Cincinnati. I done my time in South Carolina, North Carolina, and up in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay. All right. So during those 3 years, you know, what did you kind of just learn? I mean, what did you learn about yourself?
Well, it was goddamn four.
Four, yeah. Oh, my bad.
It was four, yeah. Man, I still be trying to take those four back. They be like, I'm taking all them 4 years they took from me. I'm taking them back. I need them. Right. But it was during that time, you really learn a lot about yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I went through a hell of a time. It was so much going on, because when it first happened, I'm telling my family and stuff, like, yo, okay, our indictment papers say 10 years to life. So I'm like, yo, I'm going to probably do 10 years, but I'll probably get out in about 7 or 8 with good time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was bracing my family for that. So what I learned about myself was, like, some of the things that you know about yourself, and you, like, it's like characteristics about yourself that you know that are there. Like, when you get put in certain situations, like, it's really like, this shit is real. Like, okay, I always told myself, if this happened or if that happened, like, this is how I'm gonna play it. Like, and this, I'm from the streets. At this time, I've been in the streets for so long. Like, it's the street code. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I learned a lot of shit about myself. Then I actually took that whole situation a lot. I handled it a lot better than you. I would actually thought I may have handled it. Look, when you're facing so much time, like, right. I was shocked, but I was like, yo, I just had a, like, this is real. Like, shit, this is it. I mean, at the end of the day, I got to go do this time, and that's it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it, whatever. Like, I got to do the time, and that's it. But, man, I got to tell you, once we get into a little more, I'll tell you some more shit, because that was like the most trying time ever. Like, it was God was just testing me so much at that point in time. It was crazy. I almost did 30 years.
So Tone gets ready to prepare mentally to do his jail time. He kind of goes into depth into how he almost got 30 years and the imperfections into our judicial system. He also begins to speak about laying the foundation of what Title Chaser is going to be. So as we mentioned before, this segment of the podcast does have explicit content. So please be mindful of children as you're listening. Enjoy.
I had 3 phone call indictments. I didn't get caught selling nothing. Didn't get caught doing nothing with none of that. Mm-hmm. I had 3 phone conversations that they said that I was talking about selling dope. So that's where my conspiracy came in with everybody else. And truthfully, those phone calls were so motherfucking bogus.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the day, as bogus as they was, they still got me indicted. You know what I'm saying? Because let me just tell you, one phone conversation was me planning a party for my man Pop.
Uh-huh.
And me and him talking, and they talking, and we talking about how much Jim Jones gonna charge him to come to the party, and how much Joel Santana gonna charge him to come to the party. But they guess what they did? They say, oh, they ain't talking about that. They talking about cocaine prices.
Wow.
So this is during this situation, I'm starting to be like, yo, this is America. Yeah. You feel me, my nigga? This is America. Whatever they want to do to you, they will if they want to.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So shit I started seeing shit a lot differently. But anyway, how I almost ended up getting to 30 was, dudes, I went ahead, like, Papa Joe was on the run. Boom. He was on the run. Like, a lot of people was cooperating, this and that. You know what I'm saying? I was standing my ground, like, yo, like, this is what it is. I braced my family for, told them I'm going to do this time. They're like, okay, cool. I got them equipped for it. So I'm like, all right, cool. So my lawyer, like, okay, well, they got two people that told on you. This person told on you and that person told you. I ain't even going to call out no names. I ain't going to call out no names on a couple things I'm about to say.
Yeah.
But y'all know who the fuck y'all is. So yeah. They said, yo, this person told on you about this much. This person told on you about that, about this much. Which, in reality, I knew it was true because that shit was true.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? It's different if they coming to you like, yo, such and such said this.
Or unite, they speculate, like it's speculating. Like, they ain't got nothing, they ain't seen nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. But my lawyer told me that these two motherfuckers said they came to see me and such and such sent them to see me and they brought me this. And then I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
I said, that's fucked up. But I knew, like, when the shit happened, these was a couple of niggas who got right out anyway.
Right, right.
So niggas knew what time was with them.
Right.
But, so I'm just like, yo, okay, that's cool, listen. So I say, tell them I'll take a plea on what motherfuckers told on me about. And that's it. I ain't got nothing to say about nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So she like, okay, cool. Now my lawyer, I fucking hated her because she was just trying to get me to cop out like a motherfucker though,
right.
For real.
Right.
She was a bitch, but she saved my fucking life.
Man,
At the same damn time, bruh. She saved my life. So she go back and she tell them that. And they like, cool. We respect that. You know what I'm saying? Telling he, for what everybody told, what the two dudes told him about, we'll offer him 5 to 40. He can't get below the 5 years because you're not eligible. He's not eligible for safety valve. Well, first of all, he's not cooperating. And right. Then second of all, he's not eligible for safety valve. Do you know what safety valve means?
No.
Okay, safety valve is when if you get picked up by the feds, you've never been in trouble, you're eligible for safety valve. That means you can have a mandatory minimum, but the judge can go under that mandatory minimum because you've never been in trouble.
Okay.
That's the safety valve.
No.
So I've been in trouble before.
With the feds or just period?
No, just regular case. All it takes is a regular case. You can get convicted of a fucking misdemeanor.
Then
you're not eligible for safety valve. Safety valve is for someone who's never been in trouble, felony or misdemeanor.
You gotta love our wonderful judicial system, right? Crazy, right?
It's crazy. It's definitely crazy. But so they say 5 to 40, but you got to think, bro. Remember, I told you I'm about my family and everything. So I had already braced them told them I was going to do 10.
Mm-hmm.
So when she come back and she tell me they say 5 to 40, I said, shit. They said, but they going to recommend 5, but you can't get under the 5.
Mm-hmm.
I said, shit. I'm blessed.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean?
Thinking like it's set up. Yeah.
Bruh, like I right hand of God. I'm like, oh, I won.
Mm-hmm.
I got to pay this to the game. Like, this is part of the game.
Right. Yep.
This is what I signed up for.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? So I owe this to the game. So this is just what it is. That's how I felt when I was going, when I was bracing myself to do the 10 or more.
Right.
So when they come back and say that, I'm like, cool. So she like, listen, they're gonna get the plea agreement together. You ain't gonna have nothing about no 5K1 in your paper, what paperwork whatsoever, because you're not cooperating. You know where 5K1 is?
Nope.
Okay, a 5K1 is when you cooperate and you tell them something about somebody else to help you get your time lowered.
Oh, okay.
So when they offer you a 5K1, it has to be in your plea agreement, because everything is in writing. It's just like business, bro. Everything got to be in writing.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, oh shit. Okay, that's cool. I'm not tripping on that shit. Shit. 5 years. Yeah. And she's like, okay, well, in your good time, the time that you've been in the county, all this time you've been in the county, because you remember I told you I never went home. All the time you've been in the county is going to count towards your sentence.
How long were you in the county?
Shit, I've done about eight months in the county.
Oh, all right, all right.
Remember, about 8 months in the county. So she said the time that you in the county, that's going to go towards your time, the time. You're going to go in, you eligible for the drug program. You can get a year and a half off from the drug program. And then you can get 6 months of halfway house.
Oh, so you really like,
man. I'm really like, oh, hell yeah.
Sign me up.
Hell yeah. Yeah. But everything she told me was true. Like I say, she was a bitch, but I'm going to elaborate some more. But everything she told me was true about, except for me not getting, I didn't get the time off for the drug program because of a prior conviction. So, but other than that, everything worked out the way she said it would. Now, I'm leading up to the goddamn, how I almost got to 30 years. Now, here it is. So I get back. Well, you know, when your lawyer comes see you, they take you out the pod. So I come back to the pod like, yo, bro, like, I'm telling niggas, like, they offered me 5 years. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to take the 5 and get on up out. And this is where the crab in the barrel and the jealousy and all the hate shit start to fester.
There's always something like that in there, man.
Yeah. Because niggas in there like, yo, bro, why you just giving up like that? Like, they ain't catch you with nothing. They ain't got nothing on you. All they got is them bogus phone call conversations. You know what I'm saying?
And everybody in jail is a lawyer. At least he's locked up in the cell. They lawyers all
the time. Everybody a lawyer. Everybody a lawyer. Man. So they get in my ear daily. Boom. Bro, you shouldn't have done that, man. You gotta fight them folks, man. You know what I'm saying? They ain't got nothing on you. And me being in the situation, I had a weak point. Like, yo, they got to me, bro. They got to me. I'm like, yo, these niggas right. Like, why the fuck am I just going to jail? Just giving up like that when they ain't got nothing on me, and I'm just agreeing to do time on what somebody told on me about, even though I knew it was true.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, damn, I ain't make them prove nothing. Like, I'm just laying down.
Right, right.
So I write my lawyer. Like, yo, like, I got character letters here for my, once we go for sentencing, that, you know, that people sent me that I need to give to you or send to you or whatever. And in the letter, I'm telling her, like, but I want to take my plea agreement back. I said, I'm going to jail just because somebody told on me and they ain't even catch me doing nothing. Now, let me explain something to you real quick when it comes to conspiracy, in case you don't know. In the scope of a conspiracy, you could be liable for what everybody else done in the conspiracy. Like, you're liable and responsible for drugs you never seen or sold.
Man.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I want to explain that to you real quick to get you to understand what she said to me in her letter back to me.
Yeah.
So when I write her the letter, until I want to take back my plea agreement. Now I'm gonna tell you, I ain't even talked to my family about this shit. Like, if I would have told them,
you listening to these jail lawyers and ain't even ran nothing by somebody with some common sense on the outside.
Right. I ain't told them. I ain't ran nothing by them. I ain't told them nothing. I done wrote this lady back, told her I want to take my plea agreement back and go to trial. And go to trial, dog. So,
man,
you got to think, though, at the time, I'm also thinking like, okay, damn, I'm really rolling the dice because I don't know how this going to play out. Papa Joe still on the run. He was still on the run when I took my plea agreement. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody else at home. Look, niggas is at home chilling, bruh. Like, they at home chilling. Don't nobody really know what's going on because Papa Joe on the run. So people that cooperated, they all at home chilling and whatever the case may be. People that got bond, whether they cooperated or not at home chilling. It's about me. Right. It's literally about, out of 29, three of us was where I was at, and it was probably a couple more people, two or three more people in other facilities. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, yo, I'm rolling the dice because I just don't know, don't nobody know what's going to go on, like with Pop when he get caught or whatever the case may be, which I ain't really worried about, though. But I knew and I had the thought, like, damn, okay, these niggas told on me. But they need Papa Joe to corroborate their story. So if Papa Joe go to trial, he can't testify against me. We both on trial.
Right.
So I'm like, and if he don't corroborate their stories, shit, I might beat him. I'm like, bro, I'm thinking what I learned in the drug program, I'm having the thoughts they call super optimism. Like, I'm having thoughts that's like, yo, I can possibly beat them because I'm running these damn scenarios through my head.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So, like I said, I hear hurt with the bullshit. I won't take my plea agreement back. They ain't catch me doing nothing bullshit. So she hit me back. She texted me back. I mean, she wrote me a letter back, bruh. And I got that letter to this day. This letter saved my motherfucking life, man. This letter saved my motherfucking life. She wrote me back and got down. I wish I had the goddamn letter around. I would read it word for you. But she basically told me, you know what I mean, like, yo, you being a dumbass. I'm actually trying to find this letter because I had the paperwork with. Oh, let me see something. I you know what? I took a picture of it in my phone. It's in my phone, and I took a picture of it to always remind me how close I was to being fucked up and doing 30 years. Yeah. Hold on. I'm trying to find it. I'm gonna read it.
So why are you looking for that? So you in there, you contemplating, fighting the case, you ain't gonna lay down.
Right.
What are you thinking about in terms, are you thinking about businesses, are you thinking about your next plan? Are you already conjuring up, like, when I get out, I'm about to go do this, and this?
I ain't thinking about nothing.
That's, okay.
That's so far from removed from your mindset. When you in there going through that, because you can't, you got to think, you really don't know what the outcome going to be.
Yeah, you fighting for your life right now.
Right, exactly. So you, like, any future endeavors you thinking about, you ain't even thinking about that shit. Like, that shit don't even cross your mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm goddamn wondering how long I'm gonna be gone from society. Shit, my kids, my family.
Right.
Like, damn, am I gonna not see my kids graduate? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you thinking about all the shit.
Because at this time, how old are you?
Shit, at that time I was 34. Right in the nigga prime. right in my prime, especially when I'm starting to get things rolling with the bit with the music too.
Right.
I was right in my prime, bruh. But yeah. You don't think about none of that stuff. But I wrote her that. This is what she wrote me back that basically saved my life. She said she wrote the first paragraph was about the bullshit character letters and all of that, her telling me to send her the character letters or she'll pick them up when she comes see me or me bring them or some shit. But second paragraph, this shit saved my life. She said, also, with respect to the mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years that you are facing, that was a negotiated settlement that you and I worked out with the government based on the amount of drugs that you personally acknowledged selling and the fact that you are not a cooperating witness. As you recall, you were originally facing a charge which carried a mandatory minimum of 10 years. She put 10 years and she put it in bold letters.
Yeah, this the letter you put up on Facebook when Cass was trying to say you was snitching and all.
Yeah. Niggas was talking that bullshit. I'm gonna go into that shit too, because that shit also was testing me. But soon as I came home, I'll finish this and we'll jump into that. But like she said, this is the letter I put on Facebook soon as I got home, because I kept it with me all that time. She said, she said, as you recall, you were originally facing a charge which carried a mandatory minimum of 10 years. With your prior record and lack of cooperation, had you been found guilty of that charge at trial, you likely have received a sentence of more than 10 years. Now, in parentheses, she got, and this is what I just explained to you. As you know, everyone in a conspiracy is responsible for the entire quantity of drugs sold during the duration of the conspiracy. Thus, the plea agreement was/is horribly favorable to you, in my opinion, as it puts you at/around 5 years and not 10. In my sentencing memorandum, I'm going to be arguing that the sentence of a minimum term of 5 years is appropriate in this case. Basically, after that, I will see you at the plea hearing. There will be a full docket that day of your co-defendants, so it will be a long afternoon. You know what I mean? So that paragraph saved my life because it reeled me back in.
So, So walk me through. You just read this letter.
Right.
What's your mind right at that point?
At that point, after I read it, man, you a goddamn fool. You got this cheap motherfucking right. You better go take your little time and go on about your business.
Walk it off. Really? Walk it off.
Listen, you goddamn fool. You better stop listening to these dumb niggas around talking that bullshit. Go in and take your time. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the thing. Yeah. Like, and I've never been the type of person that would let what other people say influence me. So I felt like a jackass at the time, talking about I wanted to take my plea agreement back, dealing with the feds and getting 5 years. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Especially for what, you know what I mean? Like all the shit I've done all my whole life. Like, come on,
right,
man. Like that shit didn't even make no goddamn sense. So
it sound like arrogance started creeping in.
Yeah.
You know, too, in the beginning, arrogance was in there. You know, it's like, man, yeah, you right. I ain't about to sit in here for nothing just for free.
Right.
You know, y'all gonna have to beat me.
Mm. Bruh. And that was the crazy part, like I told you. Now, when I took my plea agreement, Papa Joe was on the run. Mm-hmm. They had ended up just catching me right before I was about to get sentenced and right before they was about to send me off. So Papa Joe, he was the lead dude on the case. I say, my dude. When they end up catching up with him, whatever, he took it to trial. And them motherfuckers gave him 30 goddamn years, bruh.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if I would have went to trial, I would have went to trial with him. I could have asked for a separate trial. But 9 times out of 10, they wouldn't have granted me a separate trial because we was on the same conspiracy together.
Right.
And like I just read to you, and explain to you, in a conspiracy, you're responsible for everything during the scope of the conspiracy, whether you fucking done it or not.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So my motherfucking ass would have got 30 years too, bro.
Right. Yeah. You was doing the 30, if not 25. Oh, it might have, you know what I'm saying, hit you off with the little liens, hit you with the 25, because you wasn't the, you know, the man cap.
Yeah, I wasn't the man cap, but you're right. I would have, I could have got any.
You were sitting down
20 and 30 for real, easy.
Yeah,
easy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From listening to other motherfuckers in jail. So now, that's why I say that's where once they gave me 5 years, it was a couple dudes on my case. You know what I'm saying? My one dude was cool. Boom, boom, boom. Another dude in there, this nigga was hating as soon as I told him they gave me 5 years. This nigga like, man, bro, they ain't give you no goddamn 5 years for nothing, this and that. So he like, man, I can't believe it. So I said, okay. Nigga, I got my paperwork. Like, when I say, my lawyer bring me my plea agreement to sign, you gonna be able to see it because they got to give you your plea agreement.
Right.
So like I say, if you cooperated, then it's going to be in your paperwork.
In the paperwork, right.
You know what I'm saying? In real.
So wait a minute. So I thought during those fake, they wouldn't have you in the same holding. They wouldn't have you in the same jail as some of your co-defenders.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. But it was so many of us. It's 29 of us. So sometimes they still house you together. But they try to separate you, especially if they feel like you in cahoots together or whatever. Like, these two dudes, like, at the end of the day, these two, we were still just standing strong, even though the dude I'm about to explain to you, what he done, he really wasn't. We didn't know it, but we ended up finding out he was secretly going, cooperating with the feds against his dude and his dude's, I think it was like it was a girl. It was like his niece or something, his dude's people, some shit. But so this nigga was hating that I got the 5 years. He's also secretly writing a book while we in there.
Right?
So this, yeah, right. Nobody.
How the hell did he get a book deal?
Nope, bro. He self-published. And nobody would, he didn't tell nobody he was writing a book. He was secretly writing a book about shit that was going on, but he was lying in the book. This is where the shit got fucked up with me, and it tries me to this day sometimes, where I still have to be like, don't even pay motherfuckers no attention, because there was another tone on the case. This motherfucker mixes me and Tone up on certain, now that Tone was cooperating with the feds. You know what I'm saying? So he mixes certain things about me and Tone up in his book. Because it's like I say, this dude don't really know me. You know what I mean? So he don't really know Tone, the other Tone either. So he mixes like aspects of our life up. He said that Tone was the one that owned the Shark Bar.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So when people hear Tone that owned the Shark Bar was, you know what I mean? The obvious, because you know we changed the name from the obvious to the Shark Bar.
Obviously Shark Bar.
Right, right. So they automatically identifying that Tone with me. And then at the same time, he ain't just lying on me and get me confused with the other Tone. He lied on other people in the book, but he only done that to throw shade to other people because he knew he was snitching.
Right. He was trying to get it out there early before.
Right. I think in the book he talking about he had to make a what they call an executive decision because somebody was telling on him. Like, no, nigga. You told on your nigga.
Cass probably wasn't even applying no real pressure either.
Man,
that'd be the thing.
Bro, they wasn't, man. He tried to make everybody else seem bad. Like he basically said everybody on the goddamn case was goddamn snitching, except for like one dude. You know what I'm saying? Put that book out there and people start believing that shit. I'm like, y'all motherfuckers believing this bullshit ass book from a snitch ass nigga?
Right.
Like, come on, man. Y'all got to be fucking smarter than this. Right. You know what I'm saying? So that's the reason when I got home, motherfuckers talking this and talking that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had to set the record straight and post my paperwork, everything on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Tell a motherfucker, hey, you want to know anything about me? Go pull my court transcripts. Yeah. I tried to throw my lawyer under the bus and told the judge, like, listen, I motherfucker took my deal and I ain't even see my discovery. You know what your discovery is?
Yeah, remember we had that.
And all shit. Right. So I'm telling them, I ain't even see my discovery. I said I cooperated. I told on myself. I gave myself up. That don't count for nothing. The judge like, no. And the prosecutor like, no, that doesn't count. That doesn't.
Damn.
Like, but you, like, my shit is public record. You can pull all my transcripts. Right. That's why I say anybody got anything to say about motherfucking me, they can pull that. They can pull my transcripts. So I'm like, I'm clowning with the judge and them in there at this point because I'm back to myself. Like, okay, I'm getting this 5 years. I'm winning. I'm like, oh, I can't get a 5K1 against myself.
Right. <yeah.
laughs> You know what I'm saying? And they like, you know, at this point, it's over with. I'm going to do my time.
Right.
I know realistically, my mind back right. I know I didn't won, so to speak. Right. So I'm cool with it. But yeah, like, I couldn't believe that. Like, yeah, dude wrote that goddamn book, lying like a motherfucker, snitch ass nigga. I've never seen that nigga to this day. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can't believe everything somebody say.
And that'd be the crazy thing. It's like, you never see these people no more. I think I was talking to, we know him. We got a mutual friend here. He coached the Title Chasers. And we was just talking. And it's like, man, you never see these cats no more. It's either they protected, you know, by the feds, or they, you know, witness protection or whatever. Or if you see them, you can't do nothing to them.
Right.
Because they're protected.
Right. You know what? And I wanted to, and bruh, I had to grow out of that too, because I wanted to do something to him for so long, for lying on me and for like get my name mixed up with the other tone. Because I had to, like, you, bruh, I done stood stalling and you done ran my name through the mud.
Right.
Like, but it's real niggas that really know, like I said, even before I had to come home and post my paperwork, real niggas from the street, they knew it. Bruh, as soon as I got home, motherfuckers, like, I'm talking about real niggas, they like, bruh, we know what the real was. You solid. You know what I'm saying? And it was respect there. I have to deal with the shit from somebody that's hating every now and then. You know what I'm saying? But that ain't, but the motherfuckers that really know and really fuck with me, like, they know what it is. Only motherfuckers who try to bring that old shit up or say something, that it's a hater.
Right. So, and that'd be the other thing too, is like, you know, always look at it. You can't never get your name dragged through a mud by a cat that ain't doing nothing.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? By a cat that ain't got nothing established or he hating. You know what I'm saying? You know what his intent is.
Right.
It ain't like it's coming from
right,
you know, family or, you know, somebody that you respect, you know?
Yep. You're right about that. So that's, so it took me, like, doing me, so far as me, like I said, just getting locked up, me going, getting locked up, never coming back home, me staying solid, like, out, and for this nigga to lie on me and to run my name through the mud and all of that, and me still have to deal with that, when you done stay true to the game,
right?
Like, that shit sometimes was like the most frustrating shit ever. Right. You know what I'm saying? But I'm at the point now, I just laugh about it. Even if somebody chooses to bring it up, I say, listen, still got all my paperwork. Still got my plea agreement. Still got my letter from my lawyer to save my life. And you can go still pull court transcripts if you want to.
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying? So I'm so far removed from it now at this point. It's just funny to me. It's funny to me.
Because I think me and you done had these conversations about, you know, stuff happening for a reason. You know, everything being God ordained. And, you know, you think about how these situations came about, and like you said, if you make one wrong decision, if you go fight that, you're doing 30 years. But a lot of times I think God intervened on our behalf, save us from ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And to where, you know, all right, we're gonna, you got to go through a little bit of something, but you're going to come out better for it.
Right. And you know what? And as bad as I wanted or the music thing to happen and is disappointed, I felt, you know what I mean, that I let my family down. Once I got in and I really started doing my time, that's when, you know what I mean, things started to, like, my mind started to reshape and refocus. Like
that moment of clarity.
Because even when I went in, before I went in, I would tell my mom, like, yo, I'm sorry. Like, man, like, I know I messed up. You know what I mean? We was almost there. She told me, like, listen, don't worry about that. That probably wasn't your blessing. If this is happening to you right now, that wasn't your blessing. And God got something better for you in store.
Right.
So don't never feel like you let me down, nobody down. You know what I'm saying? What God has planned is what he has planned.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So at the time, I'm just like, you know, I'm taking it. I'm still down about it. So I always remember that when she told me that, though. So me going to, as bad, like I said, as I wanted the music thing to happen, that when I went to jail, that might have saved my life. Who's to say, you know what I'm saying, like, not to speak down on anybody in the music game or whatever, but from my era, you had your dudes from the streets that was successful in music CEO-wise. Like, I'm a CEO. I ain't an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a CEO. But there, it was some of those same guys that didn't sustain success.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So who's to say I would have still been successful? I might have had my successful period, and then I might have phased out too.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So I try to look at shit like that on the flip side. So so when I was gone, though, and I had that clarity, that's actually when Title Chaser was born.
Don't worry, we're not just going to leave it there. Part 2 will be back up next week. This is our very first episode. Once again, Chaseology on TC Lifestyles Podcast. I hope you guys were able to get a feel of, you know, who Tone is, how he started Title Chaser, why he started Title Chaser. And I hope you guys continue to support the brand. You can go to www.titlechaser.com to place your orders, as well as to create a profile for the social networking platform. So I hope to hear from you guys. You can reach us on Twitter at Title Chaser, as well as on Instagram at Title Chaser Sports. So I'm pleased that you guys had a chance to kick it and stick around with us. I hope to hear from everybody. Listen, subscribe. We're on all major platforms. Once again, Title Chaser, TC Lifestyle Podcast, Chaseology. I'm your host, Ron Elkins. I'm out.